This is a not something that can be stopped overnight, and the fact that even after these warnings were issued, even after the International Court of Justice issued its provisional measures instructing Israel that it had to undertake these key actions, that this has continued and the United States has not stopped it, makes them culpable for the crimes of starvation.
Alex Duval, thank you so much for joining us. Executive Director, World Peace Foundation at Tufts University. We'll link to your article. Unless Israel changes course, it could be legally culpable for mass starvation. We'll continue our conversation with Alex and post it on our website. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Nermeen Sheikh.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.
Run the time on the inside. Got just a few seconds left. Just a few seconds left. Strange people. People born just a little different than you and I. Are you ready?
Come join the Radio Lost and Found Sideshow Wagon as it rolls into your town. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour media escape of found sounds, forgotten records, outre recordings, and more. Coming to you every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight right here on KBOO.
I down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews. Stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
KBOO.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM in Portland, KBOO in Portland. Today is the 5th of February, 2024. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I am your host this morning. Thank you so much for joining us, and we encourage all of you to not only to listen, but when the opportunity comes, to call and share your thoughts and your perspective on the issues of today. Well, today is the 5th of February, as I mentioned before, and it will continue to be the 5th until 11:59 p.m. So wherever you are on this planet or beyond, have a good 5th of February. Well, there are lots of things moving and lots of things happening, and I hope that as you are either eating your breakfast, if you're listening to us live, or on your way to work or school or other obligations today, that you take the time to notice and appreciate people and things all around you. There are a few things I want to share this morning, and then I hope that you will join me in a conversation this morning. Celeste will not be here today, so it will be my voice that you hear, and I'm sure that you would like to hear other voices as well, and to do that, that depends on you participating. So get your thoughts on hand and be prepared to call in a few minutes. So, as I mentioned, let me begin by just making a couple of observations. Today is the 5th of February, and those of you who were able to, last night was the Grammy Awards, Music Awards, and I happened to watch some of it, And for those of a certain age or era, it was good to see Annie Lennox and to hear Tracy Chapman and to hear Joni Mitchell. I felt young again. But in the meantime, it reminded me, listening to particularly those artists, how often throughout history that music, art, culture is an important part of movements, of revolutions, of changes in our world. And so as we struggle to make change to improve our environment, let us continue to hold on to those things which offer us life and encouragement. Let us encourage music, encourage song, encourage singing, encourage dancing, because as a favorite revolutionary once said, I don't want to be a part of your revolution if I can't dance. Today, this month indeed, is, as many of you are aware, is the annual recognition and honoring of Black History Month. Black History Month is something that originated out of the pioneering work of scholars such as Carter G. Woodson in the beginning of the 20th century in 1915. He and others associated with him wanted to recognize and honor the legacy of the struggles of Black people in the United States. 1915 was 50 years after the end of the Civil War. So at the half century, there was a recognition of the need to honor, to recognize the contributions of Black people in the United States. It has since expanded more broadly. But in 1915, Carter G. Woodson chose to honor Black people, and at first it was Negro History Week, and it was chose the dates between the dates of Frederick Douglass' birthday, or the day in which he celebrated his birthday, and the date of Abraham Lincoln, the president of the Union during the Civil War. But so often in Black History, now Black History Month, I saw a short interview with a young person, and they mentioned that so often, if it is observed or taught in school, and let's put that aside in terms of education in our nation, but if it's taught in school, that often you hear the stories and the work of individuals. And often, you know, there might be three individuals you might hear, and this young person said, you know, we hear the stories of Rosa Parks, and actually February 4th or February 5th is her birthday, but we hear the stories of Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X. Well, I want to encourage you to expand your vision, your learning, to be more inclusive and broaden your perspective for what constitutes the history of peoples. And so I want to share with you one person who you may or may not know of, just to emphasize the breadth and the depth of contributions of peoples to the liberation of those who have been oppressed. I want to point out Henry Highland Garnett. who was at one time enslaved, who gained his freedom and became a Presbyterian minister. In 1843, there was a call, something called the National Negro Convention in 1843, which was held in Buffalo, New York. And some dozens of delegates from a dozen states came, and it was a gathering of young and rising leaders in the African American community, including people like a young Frederick Douglass. During this convention, 27-year-old Henry Highland Garnett stood up before the convention and advocated that those who were enslaved, he called for them to for their open rebellion. In his address to the delegates of the National Negro Convention of 1843, entitled An Address to the Slaves of the United States, he reviewed the history of the struggles of people in this nation. He attacked the institution of slavery and demanded that those who were enslaved to rise up and to rebel and to use every effort to break the chains of bondage. One part of the address, he talks about how God does not require you to remain in slavery, but on the contrary, condemn the immoral religion of the slave or holders and ask those who have been enslaved to rise up and rebel. And so he concludes his remarks at the National Negro Convention in 1843 with these words to those who were enslaved. He's asking for the convention to vote in favor of open rebellion of those who are enslaved. He concludes his remarks by saying, "Let your motto be resistance, resistance, resistance. No oppressed people have ever secured their liberty without resistance. What kind of resistance you had better make, you must decide by the circumstances that surround you and according to the suggestion of expediency. Brethren, adieu. Trust in the living God. Labor for peace of the human race. And remember that you are 4 millions. Henry Highland Garnett, to those who were enslaved in 1843, he said, resistance, resistance, resistance. No oppressed people have ever secured the liberty without resistance. This month, as you hear and recall the stories of African Americans, let's look beyond those we often hear and read about, and even when we hear and read about the familiar figures, let's dig deeper. So if you must and you want to talk about Rosa Parks, talk about the radical Rosa Parks. If you have to and must talk about Martin Luther King, talk about the Martin Luther King who continued to rebel against the establishment and remained a committed Christian and socialist throughout his life. And if you must continue to hear and talk about the man who was born, Malcolm Little, talk about his whole life. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Cecil Prescott. Today is the 5th of February. I have a few questions I want to toss out to you, but let's be kind and listen to the wisdom of our first caller. Good morning, Santiago. Are you there? Oh, Santiago is not there. We just have to adjust the gremlins, and we will try to pull up our caller again. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And let's see if we can pull them up again and whether the our engineer has really gotten rid of the gremlins. And now we have our guest. Santiago, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, perfect. Black History Month is really important to me and to a lot of us as Chicanos because, you know, it was through studying your leaders that our leaders were born. You know, the Black Liberation gave birth to Chicano Liberation, you might say. And many of us, you know, there were many who were working together, you know, before King was assassinated, that I think would have changed the tide of history, because there's so many people who are left out of the history books, you know, in terms of not just Black liberation, but Chicano liberation. But anyway, you know, I think it's really great that you bring up talking about the radical King, because, you know, the King that, you know, we're taught about civil rights Santa Claus, you know, who brought civil rights and then died for America's sins and then was president of the United States. And, you know, like we have such a crazy mythology around King specifically, you know, that we forget that it's like he's the one who called America the greatest purveyor of violence in the world.
Yes.
You know, and named it for what it was and was staunchly anti-capitalist. You know, and, you know, and his, and he was the, you know, before Fred Hampton, he was the first one to really pull together a rainbow coalition. Because, you know, a lot of liberals will say, you know, well, you know, if everybody would just get together, but it's like, you know, right now you look on the fascist side of things and they have rainbow fascism right now.
Exactly.
You know,
yes.
You have black and brown. Huh?
No, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I was saying, you know, like they have like Enrique Tarrio and like, a bunch of other cats who were clearly black, or at least black and brown, and, you know, and they, it's a unity that does nothing to disrupt the system. So that kind of throws it out the window. But yeah, you know, I think it's really important to remember that, you know, he was the first to, and not only to bring together black, white, and brown folks, but to do it in a way that not only spoke to the radical vision of the future, but also addressed the past in its truth. And that's what I really think, you know, when we think about Black History Month, it's not like it's not about like putting up a Christmas tree for a month and then just decorating it with black people, but, you know, like actually recognizing that there is a history here that has never been reconciled. That, you know, like people talk about, Abraham Lincoln and how he freed the slaves. It's like, no, he didn't free the slaves. He cast them out of their slavery, but he didn't give them anything to land on. You know, King said, you know, it was freedom, but it was freedom to starve.
Yes.
It was freedom to be cold. It was freedom to suffer.
Well, I think you raise a good point in terms of what happens after the end of formal legal slavery in the United States, that, you know, for the overwhelming majority of those who had been enslaved, it was sort of like, okay, we opened the gates, almost figuratively, but you can't go anywhere. You don't have their power to do anything, to own your land, to have political office. And for a brief, very brief time, 12 years, there was something called Reconstruction, where we had a glimpse of what a revolutionary interracial democratic society could look like. And the way the Civil War ended, it allowed those who were had been in power to just remain, if not quite hidden, just remain steady, because although they may have lost the war, they were in there for the battle. And some people might have said that the South did not lose the war, but they were able to continue the horrors of slavery in new and evil ways.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to point out. And I think more to your point about the Civil War, I think a lot of people, there's a couple things that people really get twisted about that, in that the battle wasn't to end slavery in the sense that they wanted to free black people, but it was to end slavery to do something to decrease the populations within city centers. Because, you know, there was the southern folks who wanted to continue slavery because it was so profitable, but the people in the north wanted to end slavery because they realized that so many of their industries were just full of black folks and they didn't want to be surrounded. But I think that's something that gets lost in the history books, and also that there were actually black revolutionary forces. Reconstruction was the compensation, because there were actual black liberation forces who took advantage of the fact that white folks were fighting.
Right.
You know, because they wanted their own land. But, you know, but I think it's really important to point out Reconstruction, that, like you said, it was a glimpse, but it was really important to remember that black folks provided for poor white folks for the first time, like in their society, that they had in their Reconstruction's its society, that they had created like reading programs, school programs, food programs that raised the tide for all oppressed peoples. But it was the rhetoric of the planters, the rich white folks, that kind of stoked that needless outrage that allowed what little could be done within a Reconstructionist era to be torn apart, even though it was something that was being done for all oppressed people. And I think that's something really important to remember, that black folks all throughout history, in every place that they've been where they've risen up against capitalism and against imperialism, that they not only sought to raise the tide for themselves, but for all oppressed peoples, even if they weren't necessarily, like, outwardly leftist. They understood that their liberation meant the liberation of all.
Hey, excellent point. Thank you so much for calling and reminding us about the struggles for liberation, and that if we are united, we are united for the liberation of all. Thank you so much, and need to go on to our next caller, but I appreciate your thoughts and your wisdom.
No problem. Thank you, Cecil.
And you're listening to... who are you listening? I'm Cecil, and this is KBOO Portland. And let's go to our next caller. Good morning. Corey, I believe.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Sure. Good morning, Cecil. I find it interesting every time I go on Twitter, which I don't go on too much. I look at all these conservatives who, you know, post MLK Day comments and Black History Month, this and that, yet they're also anti-diversity and anti-critical race theory. I'm like, well, if MLK was anything, he was a diversity loving critical race theorist before this was even a theory. So I just find that hypocrisy to be hysterical. But also, like, these people, like, they don't understand history. Like, Martin Luther King, before he passed away, had one of the highest disapproval ratings in the country because of what he was doing. Yeah. And I think there was a ton of racial resentment that played a significant role, you know, just, you know, the way he was hated. And then he became sort of this you know, sad martyrs, true use of the word, after the fact. But also think he also was addressing, you know, economic and social inequality, not just race. He was advocating for labor rights and endorsing strikes and boycotts. And I honestly think that probably had to do more with his death was when he started talking about the money.
Well, and
that people that made him dangerous. Like, oh, he's talking about what, you know, the bottom line, which is the financial part, which, you know, we still haven't addressed in this country.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember that specifically about Dr. King, it wasn't as if he had an aha moment in 1965 and said, aha, I need to address the issue of labor and war and in terms of economics. I think it's important to realize the development of his thought and his actions and the communities, and to recognize that, as you suggest, is well thought out philosophy and movement, and also to thoroughly understand who he was, and as you noted, who our society was and is. So at the time of his death, he was like the most hated man in America, and even in, what was it, 1986, when Ronald Reagan signed the bill making MLK a national holiday, he had this horrible remarks about, you know, whether or not someone asked him, because part of the right wing talking point was, you know, he was this communist and blah 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 blah, and he made this nasty remark as he signed the bill, you know, something like, well, we'll see whether or not, but
exactly. And you had people like John McCain voted against that bill. He said he was ignorant of MLK, even though, you know, I know he was a POW. And my final point is this. I was watching MSNBC last night, and there was this really interesting conversation with Tremaine Lee and Charles Coleman just about how, you know, black men and voting and how they're really apathetic right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand that. I really don't. I think that I hate the psychology of many of these men who are like African-American males, primarily, who are voting for Trump. It almost seems like they find the fact that he is sort of doing all this stuff and it's like it's a good thing. And I talked to a young man recently who's a Trump supporter. And after we talked, mm-hmm. like I listened to him for like a good half an hour. I'm like, it almost seems like you're looking for a father figure. For some reason, you found a father figure in this person. Like the traits of a man who's been found liable for rape, the traits of a man who filed for bankruptcy several times. Like, you're the, you know, this is a college student. You're the exact opposite of Saul. I wonder why you find him so interesting. And he really didn't have an answer. And I just think that's really, you know, and I said, like, look, I think that's pathetic that you would really want to follow this man. And yet, I've given you specific reasons. I've quantified these reasons why you're not even, you know, you're not remotely being, you know, you've done more than he has, right. Yet you still think he's a good guy. And I just find it interesting. It was an interesting conversation. I'll check it out. But like,
I thank you for raising that point, because I thank you first for having conversation with a Trump supporter and trying to, you know, to understand the appeal. And you know, what you just said helps me a lot in terms of, you know, this sort of like father figure, and more than that, you know, become almost like a cult like. And I want to be careful exactly. about my words, but I thought your words, and then for me, you know, so there's this like horrible sense of what it means to be a man, and it's that. What it is, you know, a rapist, a misogynist, and a poor business person doesn't pay his bills. What do you make of the appeal Trump continues to hold among certain like religious folks? So what is in my day job, you know, religion is my profession. But what is it for those of who always taught about, you know, you should be faithful to your wife, you should have lied, you should have still, that Trump is this almost like messiah figure.
And you know, I'm the opposite. I am a big old atheist, but I mm-hmm. think that's one of the things. But I can still have a conversation with someone like you, even though, you know, I remember your background. And so even for me, like, I try to look at these things critically, and I've asked that question. Like, this is a young man who is quite religious. I'm like, wait a minute, you understand, like, basically he's the epitome of mm-hmm. everything you've been taught. Can you explain that to me? And there isn't. He just gives me a kind of smirk. I'm like, well, you know, it's all about, you know, God forgives him. I'm like, well, that's easy. That's easy, you know, to be like, yeah, if it doesn't make any sense, and not try to be insulting. Like, if it doesn't make any sense, if it's not quantitative, if it's not critical, then, you know, God will just take care of it. I'm like, that doesn't suss out, you know. And I asked this young man, like, yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. Can you make it make sense? And he can't. But he's still supporting him because it was almost like, I have to support him because he's the most religious. And I'm like, well, if you look at Joe Biden, you know, whether you want to vote for him or not, this man has been a Catholic.
Goes
all
to
of
church,
his life.
Or, you know, yeah.
Yeah, he actually goes to church. He's actually been with his wife. And there, it just, like, common sense doesn't get through. And I find it to be, at a certain point, even as a psychologist, like, this doesn't make sense. And yet, no matter what I say or do, no, facts don't matter.
Well,
it's just that.
Yeah, and that, I think, is the point. I think sometimes we have these conversations, and again, I applaud you for having an in-depth conversation with people who views things differently. But, you know, as we have these conversations, maybe, you know, if we're trying to have something a rational or something that makes sense, that doesn't work. Maybe we should, you know, it isn't about reason. It's something much more, I don't say much more, but it's not a rational. You cannot convince them, you know, by saying 1 + 1 = 2, because
exactly.
Yeah. So there's another way, emotional, I don't know what it is.
And that's what I do with him. I'm like, imagine if, you know, Donald Trump had did that to your mother or your sister. Okay. And what, and it's just like, it's almost scary. Like, there's like this blank look, you know, that goes like, and it, no matter what you say or do, even when you say something like that, you know, nope, you know, it's Trump or nothing. Like, all right. And then you realize that, as intelligent as this young man is, there's a certain thing that's missing. And I think it's what we call social conditioning. And it's really, I think, ultimately kind of scary. But I think there's been so much of it that's happened in this country over the past several years that it's really telling as well. But I think a lot of social conditioning has happened to where, you know, this man has said he's a Christian and I'm a Christian. And even though he does unchristian-like things, you know, it's like he was there first. He's the first one that was there. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Right. Hey, thank you so much, Corey. And thank you for just remaining engaged in conversations, because I think that's the only way that we as a society be able to move forward, as long as we stay engaged with those who are different than us, even though it is really difficult. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7. I'm Cecil Prescott, and you are you. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and I believe Rose is waiting. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Yes,
hi, good morning. Okay, I'm a black woman, and I am really troubled, appalled, freaked out, you name it, by the support of young black folks for Trump, and baffled by the evangelical people.
Mm-hmm.
But taking them first, I heard an interview a couple of weeks ago where someone posed that question, and this author, I'm sorry but I'm blanking on his name, who grew up in an evangelical situation.
Mm-hmm.
He said that they think that they are above Trump because they're good and gotty, but they like him because he'll get down and dirty and fight the evils that they would fight if they weren't such good, pious people.
No.
Okay. Now, I don't know how much of that is truth, but, you know, it's adds a little bit of light to the subject.
Okay.
So I'll let that ride. But then I also want to speak about young black people voting for Trump. And well, all, you know, like black people, for their youth, perhaps they don't know our history, because what people do know our history anymore? I don't think, if you didn't live it, number one, that's kind of a,
right,
you know, prevents it. But if it's not taught in schools, if it's not taught to you by, you know, your preceding generations, what do you actually know? And it's this strong man image that it's just a machismo thing. I mean, we're seeing women's rights being eroded in this country. I mean, we see some successes, but we see our rights also be eroded.
Well,
and
yeah.
I think it's a lot of sexism and misogyny out there. And for young black men, you know, there might be that going on, young Latino men. I don't know if young black women are supporting Trump. I don't know what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just some of my two cents. I'm not trying to make a summary or a conclusion, but I just wanted to throw that out there.
Hey,
thank you.
Thank you for your observation, Rose, and giving us things to think and reflect on in terms of the appeal that Mr. Trump have to young black people and also to evangelicals. That's a lot of wisdom you shared. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming the web at kboo.fm. I'm Cecil Prescott, and you are you. And let's go to, I believe, Mike is waiting to speak. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes.
All right. Yeah, I'm just in the conversation, and I don't think anything has been mentioned on the fact that, you know, your station kind of leans a little bit more left, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's an opposition, which would be the right. But in all honesty, you know, you have to realize that, you know, those both wings belong to the same bird.
Oh.
And it goes back and forth throughout history, you know. Creating division in order to rule over the population. And it's very effective, as you can note, because those who are voting for Trump, by the same token, you know, they want, you know, freedom of having their bodily autonomy respected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he introduced the vaccines. He rapid fired this thing to go through,
right,
without much thought. You know, now there's a lot of consequence for that. And Biden, at the same time, you're talking about religious folk. There is plenty of videos of him, you know, sniffing children and just being really creepy. And, you know, there's a good history of
No.
They're both in the same boat. You know, they're both.
Wait. Mike.
That's what we get.
Yeah, Mike. You made a lot of comments there. I want to engage in conversation, and I hope that you pause and listen to one another. If Mike is still there, I want you to say, what's the, summarize your point, so we can have a conversation.
Well, the point is that, you know, we're being pressed into voting for people that have no interest in bettering all races, all genders, all, you know, humanity. They need that system in place in order to keep robbing, stealing, taxing, oppressing, killing people. You know, they need that system. The system is what is failing.
So how? Yes.
Enslaving people.
So what do we do? So do we just give up and accept the system, or do we do something different?
Okay. We should never give up, but we should inform ourselves of some basic things. The first thing and this is what controls everything, is the money. The money, people don't even understand what money is. You know, money is a means of exchange. But when we use a method, which is what we use right now, called a fiat monetary system, we're printing money. Basically, you're getting paid with something that somebody else made for free.
Okay, Mike, you bring in a lot of issues here for our conversations this morning. But I think it's important. What I got was the need to look at a point you made earlier in terms of in society, you have people of different, which may appear to be opposite viewpoints, but in the society, you need both. So you need all voices to be heard so that we can create something that is powerful, well, that is helpful and hold for all of society. You are listening to KBOO FM, KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. See, the problem is I have this cheat sheet in front of me, and so I'm messing up because I should just say what I know rather than try to read it. I'm Cecil. We've been talking about a lot of things this morning. I began talking about Black history. I haven't even gotten to what I the topics I had this morning, but I want to hear what our listeners have to say. So let's go to David. I believe David is next, and thank you so much for waiting.
Okay. I want to go back to Martin Luther King when he brought up, like, the things we don't know about him, his radicalism, and mm-hmm. they brought up where he mentioned about, you know, we're the purveyor of violence in the world. But there was another area, and it was in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And he spoke real elegantly about environmental systems and all this kind of stuff. And it kind of goes with that saying, think globally, but act locally. And I just want to say with the environmental movement, somehow the climate change thing has come to be, if we do that, we're doing just everything for the environment that it needs, and it'll take care of it. But I want to mention about Monsanto and Roundup. We've got a problem happening right under our noses that's quite serious. And
and
I think, you know, somebody like Martin Luther King would, you know, bring that stuff up. But it's very hard for us now because the big corporations will tell us that if we ban Roundup, which causes cancer and all kinds of stuff, we are literally going to starve because we need this to provide us with food. And I'll just kind of leave it at that because, you know, okay. It can go off into a lot of stuff.
Right.
But you know what I mean, in a way?
Yeah. And thank you for highlighting the environment and the how Dr. King spoke about that. And then talk about the what we do know in terms of movements that in the United States in the early 1970s, mid-1970s towards 1980, there was a situation in North Carolina where Black communities were experiencing the hazards of environmental hazards, and it began the environmental justice movement, which highlights the way in which things are changing. And as we fast forward a half a century, and as you mentioned in terms of climate change, in terms of how those who are suffering most are often those society which haven't caused our climate change. So indigenous folks and people who are suffering because of terrible environmental practices. We got to.
Cecil, can I say one more thing?
Sure.
I'll just make a kind of a no money bet with you that during this whole run up to the presidential thing, there will be no talk about the environment in a certain way. Now, talk about climate change and that, because that can be talked about, but it's not something that's great now. I mean, it is. I don't know if you know what I mean, but they will not talk about, you know, clear cutting, you know, use of poisons and stuff. There will be no talk about environment on a ground level, right where it affects us here.
So let me ask you, So if there is no talk, how do we get them to talk about it?
Well, because all these big corporations have so much money and they know how to spend it well, you know, they just get people afraid. Even like during the pandemic, if I would bring up something about shouldn't we know the source of this and that, people would just lay into me about we can't stop what we're doing now and go back. And I would say no, somebody else can, you know, you see the cause.
See,
we're not going after. We got a whole bunch of medical advice on the TV about how we can fix everything by just taking care of the symptom. Get rid of the symptom,
right.
You're fine.
Okay.
But we're ignoring the cause, and that is really destructive.
Interesting point. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Let's not ignore the cause and just treat the symptoms. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. Today is the 5th of February. If you're listening live, it's 8:45 a.m. Let me apologize to Carl, who called maybe a couple of times and had to hang up. But Carl, there's no one waiting. So if you call the third time, will be the charm. I will speak with you, but I understand you are probably a busy person and have things to do. However, call or someone else if you have some thoughts. Give us a call here at 503-231-8187. This is More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Coming up next is the OMO Variety Hour if you are listening live. And if you're not listening live, then coming up next is whatever you want it to be. And so this has been a powerful conversation. There's so much insight that all of you have shared with me this morning. And we began our conversation just by, I began it by talking about Black History Month and the move to get beyond looking at the usual suspects. And as one caller reminded me, is that even those usual suspects, we have made them so, I don't want to say, they're so powerless that they are so tame that we lose the impact of their critique. So the rebellious life of Rosa Parks is made into just a nice woman who is tired. And, oh, I hear that Carl is back. So we'll put a pause on Rosa Parks and listen to Carl. Good morning, Carl. Thank you for calling back.
Hi, Cecil. Yeah, so your conversation with Corey, just, you know, and just kind of that, I don't know, that hopelessness or inability to reach people is, it's sad and it's kind of overwhelming. But I think, to me, the reason for it is really pretty simple, and it's the experience that these people had when they were little people, when they were children, and they didn't learn how to have a conversation or think in a progressive manner or understand that fighting doesn't help the situation at all. But they learned how to react and fight for, you know, whatever it is that's going on. And like Mike that called in is a good example where he's just lashing out at all these different things, and you know, he just kind of sucks the oxygen out of the room, and you can't you can't really have a conversation. It's pointless because he doesn't know how to have.
Right.
He never learned it. So
a conversation takes two people, and if one person doesn't know how to have a conversation, the other person, what do you do to encourage conversation, or do you want to encourage conversation?
Well, I think the only thing that you can do is try to engage the person in a caring, loving manner, and hopefully make an impression on them, or maybe that somehow they'll see some value in that. Maybe not now, but maybe tomorrow, or maybe some other time. But I think that's all we can do, is just speak, you know, for the love that we have in our hearts, and just hope for the best.
All right. Speak with the love we have in our heart and hope for the best. Okay, I like that.
I like that. Okay.
Hey, thank you so much, Carl.
The conversation.
You have a good day.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Volunteered Power Community Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and you are listening to More Talk Radio. We've been speaking this morning. We began by talking about Black History Month. Some of the conversations were about how do we have conversations. One person early on reminded us, shared with us their experience of talking to someone of an opposite political perspective, and how he sought to understand them. A last caller call reminded us of the necessity of being in conversation, and how difficult it is sometimes to have conversations. What do you do? Do you just walk away frustrated? Do you find common ground? Is there a way in which to find common ground? Let's go to our next caller, who might have some wisdom. I know she has some wisdom to share with us. Frances, good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
I just wanted to share about a person that I am intrigued, because I knew very little about him coming up, and just recently gained more information about Ralph Bunche.
Ralph Bunche, yes.
Yes, who negotiated a peace treaty in the first Arab-Palestinian conflict. And he received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1950, I think it was.
The first Black American to receive a Nobel Peace Prize.
Right. But his wisdom is amazing. And he formed a group called the original Young Turks, I think, when he was at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of his thoughts were adopted by Martin Luther King, actually. I think that he also, with Eleanor Roosevelt, was instrumental in writing the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights.
Yes. Wow.
And some of his, I'll just read you one of them, if I can find it right quick. He believed in negotiating and talking and talking and talking for peace.
Wow.
And I can't remember when it, but he said that anybody that's involved in problems in human relations, they should not believe that it's insoluble. They should be biased against suspicion, intolerance, hate, religious, and racial bigotry. And he also talked of
Hello?
Are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, I think somebody's trying to call me.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, he is the person that I believe should be definitely every year when we have Black History Month be mentioned among everyone.
Right. Hey, and thank you for bringing him up, because oftentimes, many times, it's been my experience that when people talk about Black history, talk about the work within the United States, and as you highlighted, Ralph Bunche was on the international scene and talked about bringing nations together and negotiating,
right,
and being...
And he did that.
Yes.
He did that.
Yes.
I've seen pictures of him in a room playing pool with people from Israel and Palestine, mm-hmm, together. They were talking about this subject that we're still dealing with today.
Right.
His quote was, "The objective of any who sincerely believe in peace clearly must be to exhaust every honorable recourse in the effort to save the peace."
Wow. Could you read that one more time? I think that's oh, wow. Could you read it one more time for us?
"The objective of any who sincerely believe in peace clearly must be to exhaust every honorable recourse in the effort to save the peace."
Thank you so much, Frances, for sharing with us just a little bit about Dr. Ralph Bunche and who he was, and reminding us of the necessity to struggle for peace, and reminding us when that Black history, all human history, encompassed so much, and let us search out those pearls of wisdom and insights from people. Thank you, Frances. Thank you for, I think, closing our program this morning with such wisdom. Go ahead.
Do you have time for me to say something else that he said?
Yes.
About preventing war. He said there's no such thing as preventative war. He said to suggest that war can prevent war is a base play on words and a despicable form of warmongering.
Oh, I love that.
The objective of any who sincerely believes in peace, and then that was the beginning of that quote I just read.
Oh.
And that was the first part of it.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And I suppose that was considered very radical at the time, but he did it, and he did it.
Yeah, and that last quote you just read reminded me in terms of how often, you know, political gobbledygook that people speak. So, yeah,
exactly.
Preventative war, no, that's like doublespeak.
Exactly. All right.
Thank you so much, Frances.
Yeah.
Have a great day. And thank all of our listeners for all the insights, for those who called in, for the insights you shared with one another, and reminding us, you know, from the need to communicate, to share, to be engaged in conversation with those who we agree with, but also with those we don't agree. And as our callers reminded us, the necessity to try to find common ground. Frances said, pointed us out to Dr. Ralph Bunche, the Undersecretary of the United Nations, who in 1950 won the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts to secure a ceasefire a settlement in Israel-Palestine in 1949-1950, reminding us how to must continue to press for peace. And you are listening to More Talk Radio. I was just looking at our engineer, because I said, oh, is there another call? And there is another call. Oh, we have... Tangent. I'm sorry, Tangent. Tangent.
That's all right.
You have the last word.
Okay, great. So Francis brought up a couple things, and I've been thinking about how many people, and certainly presidents, have won the Nobel Peace Prize for Palestine, Israel, and it hasn't happened. Okay, that's one. The other one was talking about doublespeak is there is no civil war. That was also called the war between the states, okay? But would you call it a social war? Okay. Yeah. This is one main point. Nonviolent communication. There's a group, and their main motto is, communication exists only between equals.
Thank you so much, Tangent. We got to let you go because our time is short. But communications. Stay in there and be persistent in terms of being with one another. You have been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. Stay tuned to more programming here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurai and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the air room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the air room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.